Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Luke's here at freedompotentials.org, and I'd like to welcome my other panelists. Wallace Klink from Canada. Welcome, Wallace.
Hi, Arnie. Well, I just about forgot about it. So anyway, I am here.
No worries. Pleased to have you, Wallace. Always pleased to have you. And Beata Luke's from Adelaide, Australia. Welcome, Beata.
Good morning.
No worries. Okay, I'm going to start by sharing screen and going across to our major daily newspapers, The Australian, and just to go through the, I feel like the top half a dozen articles is all about the shutting down of the border between New South Wales and Victoria. For those who don't know geographically Australia, these are the two eastern, southeastern states, the most populous. Half of Australia's population lives in these two states, and the border between the states is closed because of COVID-19 testing and the numbers that they're getting back, which is interesting. So the it depicts pictures of long queues attempting to cross the border, etc., etc. Now, the last time that the Victorian-New South Wales border was closed, another newspaper article, was in 1919, based on the Spanish flu. And I thought, well, it's probably worth having a look at how aggressive was the Spanish flu in 1919, and what does it actually mean in context to today's circumstances. So I'm bringing up this article, An Australian Perspective of the 1918-1919 Influenza, Department of Human Geography, Macquarie University, the abstract. It states that in 1919, the Spanish flu influenza caused more than 12,000 deaths. 12,000 deaths. Now, the population in Australia in 1919 was 5.3 million. We've got 12,000 deaths. We've got 5.3 million. Now, here we are, Australia is a country of 26 million. So that's five times the population of 1919. So the 12,000 deaths transposes to mean an equivalent number of 60,000 deaths occurring if the Spanish flu came through in today. And we don't have 60,000 deaths in Australia. We have 106, not 60,000, 106, 106. Okay, it's like 0.6, it's not even 0.6, it's 1/6 of 1% of the deaths of the Spanish flu. The Spanish flu shut down the border, 1919, and 1/6 of 1% is the equation that I'm putting in front of you as to how many people have actually perished in Australia. So it's an entirely disproportionate response that we're shutting down the border, that the fatalities are so low, and I'll just leave it with those two facts. The numbers and the fatalities are so low, and yet our border is shut down. Melbourne is in a complete lockdown. The whole state is going in back into stage three lockdown. The border is shut, and the disproportionate nature of this shutdown, the government response, in my view, it's actually, there is more risk to the health, vitality, and life forces of the entire population based on this lockdown. It is entirely disproportionate and unjustified. It's actually a creation of, if you like, the mainstream media. They're unrelenting on it, and they won't let it go, and yet it is entirely disproportionate. The numbers are there. I'll put the links to the articles, to the documents, so that you can go through it yourself. If you want to, if you have ears to hear that the Victorian government is out of order and our national government, which is endorsing this policy, is also out of order. So that is the Liberals in the national and the Labor in the state of Victoria. Your thoughts, please, Wallace Klink, Canada.
Well, certainly the it does sound like it's, I mean, when you consider the grief, the losses, that they've just recently announced that the losses on the stock market are greater than they've ever been. It's just a major sellout. And I mean, this must be causing untold anguish, grief, anxiety, and so on amongst so many people. I mean, you don't really hear the mainstream media, I don't think, talking too much about the secondary effects of this lockdown. At least I don't hear it here.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is really tremendous. And I mean, and somebody's benefiting from this. These securities don't just disappear. They end up in somebody's hands. Somebody who buys them at a fire sale price.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally feel that there is probably more to this thing than we can really see, because we don't know exactly, at least it's not announced, where these assets end up.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Wally, that it's actually what you're saying is that the market is lunching, that the share market, the futures, these securities are lunching, and that they're being bought up at sale prices, fire sale prices. And so the effect of the economy, if you like, or confidence in the economy, it's an interesting word, confidence in the economy. Okay, so this is, if you like, a metaphysical thing. Confidence. It's not a tangible thing because the economy is still there. The mechanics of industry, the infrastructure, the raw materials, the scientific knowledge is all there. But the share market is now lunching. And okay, that's an interesting phenomena. But in regard to the COVID-19 circumstances in Australia and the lockdown, and the fact is that these people are in isolation. There are now multi-story buildings virtually with security guards at every floor, so you can't leave your home, you can't leave the building, and they're in a, that's described as a cruise ship, but it's nothing like a cruise ship, because if you're in a cruise ship, you've got gyms, you've got swimming pools, you've got all sorts of facilities. You can go and walk out on the deck, you can do all sorts of things on a cruise ship, and it's a place of leisure and plenty of food, plenty of entertainment, plenty of other things. So it really is a step back from, if you like, the real world. But this situation is, these are, some apartments have 3-bedroom, 17 people living in them. 17 people. It's nothing like a cruise ship. So the narrative that the media paints is absurd and, in my view, irresponsible. It's painting a completely false picture. And of course, they're not actually reporting facts in front of us. They're essentially smoke and mirrors for us to accept this policy of lockdown. And of course, the effects on people is absolutely phenomenal. Okay, there's an economic effect. We're going to lunch the economy. We're going to cause massive, massive bankruptcies and job losses. That's it. But also in the lockdown itself, we're having people who are losing contact with those that they need to maintain contact with. The isolation is causing enormous mental stress. And you've got to take into account the, if you like, the potential for suicide, the potential for if you like, a permanent damage to the psychology of individuals based on, think about it, in prison, isolation, that's what's actually going on. You're in an isolation cell, which is your home. Your thoughts, please, Beata Lukes.
From the point of view of woman and a carer, it's obviously a very, very wrong strategy to isolate people like that. Immunity is actually gained by contact with diseases, and seeing how very little adverse influence this COVID has got on the society, it's absolutely ridiculous the steps they're taking. There is no comparison whatsoever with Spanish flu. The numbers or the severity of that illness back then, of that virus. People were hemorrhaging from their lungs and drowning in their own blood. That was a totally different vicious virus that took over the entire globe. And where it came from is still debatable. And virologists are scratching their head. And there is a lot of different theories on that subject. So there is no comparison whatsoever. The numbers don't show anything that would put us in danger. If anything, the reverse is observable. Closing people down is outrageous.
Mm. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I really, really appreciate that candid opinion there, Beata. And I know that life forces, if you like, the vitality within individuals is based on exposure to fresh air, clean water. And I would suggest that if you've got a significant plant-based diet, plenty of fruit and vegetables in your diet, then you're doing reasonably well for looking after yourself. But if you're concerned about winter bugs and that, well, in this household, we have a regime of garlic. We also have a regime of vitamin C, regular sources of vitamin C. We have 5 orange trees in the backyard, 5. Okay, so we've got plenty, is it 4 or 5? Anyway, we've got plenty of sources of oranges, tangelos, grapefruit, and mandarins. So our winter is citrus is everywhere. And the thing is that this is a normal strategy for you to actually promote your exposure to the real world, because the real world is giving you your vitality. You need the sun, you need vitamin D. Now, in these lockdowns that are going on, you're not getting those. You're getting a limited, if you like, diet. You're not on a cruise ship. You're on something that you're going to get from Coles or Woolies. And of course, people are going to be fighting over even the food that's coming. So it really is. It's totally unwarranted, unjustified. And in my view, the government is behaving in a criminal manner, a criminal manner. This is a crime against the people who are being locked down. They have no, in my view, no constitutional authority to do this. And we are turning into a, if you like, a corporate dictatorship. Fascism is alive and well in the state of Victoria, New South Wales. It's interesting because in South Australia, where I live, they're actually talking about opening the border in the middle of this month, which is probably next weekend. So it seems almost timely that this second wave of COVID-19 is coming. And as I said, the fatality rate is entirely disproportionate based on the population of what it was in 1919 to what it is in 2020. We have 5 times the population. And in 1919, the Spanish flu was 12,000 fatalities, 12,000 fatalities, which transposes to 60,000 on today's population numbers, 60,000. We don't have 60,000 fatalities. We've had 106, and the last statistics I looked at, the average age for those 106 people was around 80 years old. 80 years old. Hello. The Victorian government is completely out of order with what it's doing. And we need to take a step back and really rethink this whole thing about government. What is its purpose? What is it for? And what is it that we, the people, consider to be an acceptable outcome? What is it? Are we happy with a dictatorship? Are we happy the fact that our rights to freely move about are being subdued, or if you like, entirely restricted, our rights to move about? And at the same time, of course, we've got this phenomena of the, if you like, cultural Marxism coming at us. And isn't it ironic, isn't it interesting that Victoria, Bolshevik state of Victoria, is so strong on this perspective, cultural Marxism. They're leading the pack, the Monash universities and the other university, because Melbourne is a university city. And of course, the heart of Melbourne voted for the Greens candidate for the lower house, the only Greens candidate to get in. So to me, that's a reflection of full-blown communism in that city. They believe in it, and they're actually living it through. And now they're experiencing it. This is what communism tastes like. This is what the imposition of communist rule over people is about. It's totalitarianism. And of course, the build-up that we're seeing on this COVID-19 is that the only response is if you are going to get your vaccines, and not just one, but a string of vaccines. And Bill Gates, the billionaire, and other financial instruments tied in with the World Health Organization, they have a vested interest in the outcome of this COVID-19. To the tune of billions, if not trillions of dollars, to vaccinate the whole world and if you like, supposedly provide immunity to an ailment that your body will actually process naturally. So it's an entirely different scenario here. What we're seeing here is we're seeing the coming together of corporate, if you like, international corporatization, the marketing of drugs, and the lockdown of the people, insisting that you will, you shall, you must have our product. I call that fascism. Your thoughts, please, Wally Klink.
They're trying to, even today I was listening to the radio, and they're talking about stressing the importance, the responsibility of going along with the program in the interests of the larger society. So in other words, they're trying to use the guilt trip again, which, you know, I mean, I believe in responsibility, but where does this end, Larnie? Is there any end to this? I mean, how many vaccines have they got already? Are we going to have our whole lives dominated by a whole endless stream of vaccinations? We didn't get to where we are with all these supposedly necessary vaccinations. I mean, it just doesn't add up. I mean, if they're going to be forcing this on us in great volume this way, there's got to be something wrong. That's not the basis of human life. So I think it's really quite frightening in a way, because it also means that they are asserting their right to interfere with our individual lives on a massive scale, and we're supposed to accept it.
Now, I appreciate where you're coming from on that, Wally, that it's entirely disproportionate that a private company, and I will call them private companies, the World Health Organization is financed by big money. It's not financed by government. It's not an extension of government. It's interesting that America has given notice to withdraw from the World Health Organization. But they only contribute, the largest economy in the world only contributes about 15%. The other 85%, if you look at the finance that goes to it, is from banks. It's from Bill Gates. It's from Big Pharma. That's where the World Health Organization is. And it's similar in Australia. The Therapeutic Goods Association is made up of government and private interests. And so it's where the government and private interests come together. And they're recommending the products that the private interests are promoting. So there's a vested interest. It's actually a conflict of interest.
Yeah, and our governments are subject to pressure from these interests.
Absolutely. Lobbyists and things like that in the corridors of parliament, all that sort of stuff. And of course, the worst case in these sort of circumstances is that the bureaucrats and the ministers, it's like a revolving door through these big corporations, and they move from, if you like, responsible positions in the public sector to responsible positions in the private sector. So they themselves, those that are recommending it, have a vested interest. It's not a clean slate. It's certainly not clean science. Now, the revelation just over the weekend, the Mark Anderson videos that we've placed on the ALOR.org front page, AustralianLeagueOfRights.org front page. You'll see three videos there up until sometime tomorrow. And Collin County Commissioner's Court is dealing with the actual identification protocol, the changed identification protocol for COVID-19 in America. They've changed it from a test into if you happen to be in contact with someone who has tested positive. Now, that person who has tested positive may actually be asymptomatic, may have no symptoms whatsoever, but they've tested positive. So that really relies on the test, the authenticity, the validity of the test. But based on that person who has tested positive, if you work with them, if you live with them, if you're their neighbor or extended neighbor or extended family, you've had any contact whatsoever, then it becomes that you are also considered probable. So, of course, the amplification of the numbers just in the disease itself, in the virus itself, the amplification is at least 10 times, if not 100 times greater than what it actually shows with the test. Now, it then goes further, and that is the question of morbidity. If a person dies and they're attributed to COVID-19, you would expect it to be based on a test, but in actual fact, it's not. It's based on symptoms and probability. Probability, not proven, not substantiated, just they had a cold, they had pneumonia. Doesn't matter if they had pre-morbidity conditions like heart failure or lung disease or emphysema or anything like that, diabetes, whatever, all these things that could have contributed to the death. But if they happen to fall into this probability category, then it's attributed to COVID-19. So the statistics coming out of America are dubious at best. They are dubious. But the fact is that the big players in America are lining up to medicate the entire world. They're lining up the vested interest in this. This is going to be the largest transfer, if you like, of wealth from the public, or if you like, the public in the sense of the individuals who have to pay for this, for these vaccinations and other medications, to private interests. It is absolutely phenomenal. That's what's actually going on. So it's really corporatization is taking over the entire planet, and our governments are doing us no good. They're not helping us at all. If anything, they are a captured species. They're so reliant on donations. Your thoughts, Wally, sorry.
They're facilitators.
Yeah, they're facilitators. That's right. They're actually part of the front counter of corporations. So we've got to consider, okay, these are the things that are going on politically. Now, how do we come out of this? How do we come out of this? The first is to recognize, in my view, is to recognize under what agreement do we have government, even in the first place? Under what agreement do we have it? The Constitution of Australia begins with we the people. In America, it's similar. We the people. It's an agreement of the people. This is how we're going to be governed. And limited constitutional government is the norm. It limits the power. And if it's not clear enough, you may actually introduce amendments, as America has. It's introduced amendments to limit the power and insist on these are inviolable rights of the individual. And those inviolable rights are being violated as we speak, right in front of us. The freedom to move around. You're healthy. I take my vitamins. I have my garlic. I have plenty of vitamin C, clean water, good food. I'm a healthy person. And I can't move around. I've got to be locked up in a multi-story tower. I can't even come out to go for a jog. I can't even come out to go to the gym or to go and work on a garden somewhere or whatever, or do my employment. I can't do these things. The government has locked me down, not on the basis of demonstrable, provable contamination that's going to cause effect to someone else, but simply just as a blanket rule. This bloke has gone bunter. This Victorian Premier has gone bunter. And the fact is that their federal government, conservative, rubbish, conservative government is doing everything they can to substantiate what he's doing. So it's they're in bed together. The conservatives and the Labour, or if you like, the full-blown Bolsheviks, are in bed together. They're doing this thing together. Now, how do you, okay, this is government, but how do you actually respond health-wise? What are the best things that you can do to maintain your health in the flu season? What are the things, the practical things that you can do? It's a very important question. Your thoughts, please, Beata Luke.
As to the flu season, stay out of trouble by taking vitamin C, reinforced with zinc and vitamin D. That's the first thing. This is the most basic rule. Everyone will tell you, although Fauci's and Gates's of this world will deny that knowledge. So go back to the basics. What would have your grandmother done in the circumstances? Honey and lemon juice, most likely, and stay in bed and rest. That's your flu recipe. And taking a flu vaccine makes people very, very sick. Everyone listening to this, please realize that vaccines are not a benign substance. The viruses that they introduce, the live viruses, are grown on monkey cells, or murine, which is mice cells. They will introduce zootonic viruses coming from animals, which is something that we got over already by living in better conditions for the last 50 years, 100 years. So reintroducing retroviruses is not good for us. Another thing is that the aborted fetuses are used those days to grow the virus on as well. So it's introducing DNA from other humans into your body. It's introducing DNA from animals. Tell me, how good could that be for us? And they also insisting that the flu shots must be repeated every so often. Does it mean to you that flu shot is going to protect you from anything if it's not producing enough immunity and they have to repeat it all the time? Well, I rest my case here. Think about it, please.
Thank you for that, Beata. It is most important that you can actually put strategies in place to maintain your health. The first, in my view, is fresh air, clean water, and fresh food. If you can concentrate on a plant-based diet, you'll do well. The more food is processed, the less life forces are in it. That's a fact of life. That's indisputable. And so you need those life forces. Your actual life comes from the soil. It comes from the rain. It comes from the air. So it's you really need to consider these points of view. You need to place them in perspective. What's going on in Victoria is the very opposite of what should be occurring. Putting a face mask on, as I understand it, it minimizes the flora that you actually need to promote development of your immune system. You actually miss the flora. So putting a face mask on is actually directionally incorrect. It seems as if the world has gone mad. It's gone upside down. It's doing the very opposite of what it should be doing. Your thoughts, please, Wallace Klink, and closing comments.
Well, they're trying to address that problem, I noticed, just in the last while. They have apparently picked up on the criticisms that have been made, and they're trying to offset them or discredit them. And, whenever you do anything of a fundamental nature with the human body, you have effects. The idea is to have effects. How do you know that those effects are going to be desirable? There's so much literature on claims that vaccines have caused some very, very serious and even fatal results, and disfiguring people and all sorts of things. Now, where does the authority come for anyone to force that sort of those measures upon other people? Where do they get their authority? They will say that they get their authority, but in order to try and head off damaging conditions within society. But they make mistakes, and they've made some really bad mistakes. And the flu vaccine is recognized. I think a lot of people have said that they've had their vaccines, but they still got the flu.
Yeah, that's right.
Natural immunity is something that's built into us. And I think that surely there can be nothing more effective than natural immunity, because we adapt to our environment. I don't think our environment normally includes a whole bunch of artificial vaccines, not a normal condition for us. So I think it's really quite dangerous. But I think what's really dangerous is their attempt to make it normal, acceptable, and for them to assume the authority to administer these so-called corrections. And it just strikes me as it's a type of arrogance that simply defies any reasonable explanation. I mean, the individual is free to become engaged in that sort of thing if they want to, but I don't think they should be psychologically pummeled, brutalized into accepting it. And that seems to be a large component of this program.
Yeah, of course, because the media is playing such a pivotal part in this entire narrative. The media is not actually presenting real facts. I've shown you the real facts. 60,000 deaths proportionally in 1919 to the Spanish flu caused a lockdown of the border. 60,000. In Australia, 106. And the average age, 80 years old. It's entirely disproportionate. Your thoughts and closing comments, please, Beata.
Well, this strategy is in such a stark contrast with the concern for our health generally, because just have a look at Kentucky Fried Chicken or some other fast food outlets. You know, they have been banned from some countries altogether. Pack your bags, go home. We don't want you here. I think Russia is one of those places. So think about it. Nobody cares about your health. And suddenly they will force it on you. You'll be healthy whether you want it or not. That's what Bill Gates wants.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Who benefits? Who benefits from this strategy?
That's it.
Yeah, who benefits? And of course, you've got Big Pharma right in the middle, boots and all. They benefit. They benefit to the point where they can medicate you whether you need it or want it or not. So it's mandatory medication. And the governments, if you like, as the arm of these corporations, is going to mandate it to the point where you cannot move. You certainly can't cross the border. You won't be able to seek employment. You won't be able to go out in the public. You certainly won't receive your pension or whatever unless you adhere to this regime, this totalitarian regime of medication. So it is. It's fascism under the label. The Victorian Premier, he calls himself a Bolshevik, and he is right. And this is where Bolshevism or fascism, communism, capitalism, they all come together. They're totalitarian in their nature. And of course, they're eroding the very things, these ancient freedoms. Our ancient freedoms are being taken away from us as we speak. So yes, a very important show today. And we consider the purpose of government, what it's about, what it's for, and the ruse, the justification that our governments are using, and the media is complicit in this, both branches of the media, the, if you like, the private and the public branches of the media, are complicit in this. They're working together in a pincer movement to force people to accept this totalitarianism. This is not about freedom. This is about totalitarianism. Thank you so much, Wallace Klink and Beata Lukes, for today's forum. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Freedompotentials.org.